Speak up.
You're listening to Speak Up on CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby. We're the campus and community radio station at Simon Fraser University, where we broadcast from unceded Coast Salish territories.
Good morning and welcome to Speak Up for Monday, February 10th. This is Speak Up here on CJSF 90.1 FM, and my name is Magnus Thiebold. I'm one of your hosts for the hour, and joining me today is...
Peter R.H.
And we do think Stephen Fan's going to be joining us shortly as well, so we can talk a bit about some of the developments. I hesitate to say the world because it's really all consumed with Donald Trump and his endless stream of threats and crazy ideas.
If I can just interject, Magnus, we have to. I got some stuff on my tablet, but we got to. I'm going to, after I say what's on my tablet here, I'm going to go over to the updates because he has said he wants to have a tariff on aluminum and steel and so on. And he said at the Super Bowl yesterday and or something like that.
Yeah, he did an interview with Fox that aired after the Super Bowl.
Okay,
yeah.
Thank you. And so I don't know. It's 1 p.m. Eastern time, so I guess we can, if there's some kind of, actually, one thing I have on my tablet right now.
Yeah. I just want. Well, of course, you know, I mean, what happened over the week was, you know, when we were airing on this program last week, of course.
Which I heard.
Yeah. Mexico had already struck a deal to delay tariffs.
And later on in that same day.
And then later on that same day with a second phone call
between
Trump and our prime minister, they also ended up with a deal to delay tariffs for 30 days. Of course, in the meantime, Trump has proposed taking over the Gaza Strip as American territory, although he tends to talk about it entirely in like property development terms, you know, taking an ownership stake in... You know, calling it a development site and a demolition site and, you know, an opportunity to turn it into the Riviera of the Middle East, which, you know, on the face of it seems like a completely crazy idea. It certainly doesn't seem to respect in any way the Palestinians who live there and, you know, whether or not they are... in any way interested in leaving on their own, because he says that American troops won't go. But if they don't want to leave, it's either going to be American troops or Israeli troops. Either way, it's going to be ethnic cleansing. And that's pretty ugly. Meanwhile, more departments, government departments in the U.S. have been all but sort of shut down by Elon Musk and his Doge team, as well as according to reports, substantial amounts of government data has, at the very least, been put on threat and perhaps copied into private hands, which seems very dubious. And, of course, you know, yesterday's, as you mentioned, with Trump's words yesterday, another threat against Canada, saying, you know, he wants it to be both in terms of in the interview he did, because he did an interview on Fox News afterwards, and he also talked to the media on Air Force One flying out to wherever, to where the game, the Super Bowl was, which he attended, making more, you know, confirming threats against Canada and his desire to take us over, but also announced that there would be tariffs introduced on steel and aluminum and other metal products. This one is not just for Canada or and Mexico, but it's in fact applies to all countries, but does seem to go against his commitment last week to hold off on tariffs.
Well, I kind of this is so terrible. I'm agreeing with a Doug Ford, but Doug Ford, Doug Ford has been kind of good, I think, with all this. I mean, he said that you're just changing where the actual goalpost is all the time.
Yeah, I mean, I'm no fan of Doug Ford, and from what I've seen, his role in Ontario, politics from way over here in BC. But I would agree with you that I think he's had a good line on this particular conflict, right? I mean, I think he's, he's said the right things, and I think he's taken the right positions, and he's, one thing he said, and I think our Premier David Eby has done the same thing, is that, what's most important is that we as Canadians stand together. Provincial leaders need to stand together with the federal government to oppose all these different sorts of attacks. And it's a bit of a contrast to Alberta and Daniel Smith, Premier of Alberta, who seems to be really trying hard to split the difference and really represents a bit of a voice out of sync with most of the rest of Canada.
I kind of agree with that a little bit, because right now I'm not agreeing with Rebel News and Ezra Levant, because he's an Uncle Tom Canadian right now. I'll kind of just say, I think what you're saying is true, a criticism, but it's also that I think that Alberta has felt kind of shafted by Canada. And that's just a little bit to them, but I'm agreeing with some of your criticism. I just thought would put that in. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to get into that issue, but I think, Alberta has a bit of a stick up its butt without as much justification as they'd like to think. My take on Alberta is they're bold and brash and tell everyone to F off when they're doing well. And when they're not doing well, they whine that nobody likes them.
Well,
and
Magnus,
you behave that way, that's
it's also about the amount the federal government is taking from them, taxation through various ways.
Yeah, but they're on the same arrangement as everybody else.
Okay, well, right? I plead a bit of ignorance, but I just thought I would.
Anyway, what I was going to ask you about, because I don't follow Rebel News, and they are sort of a right wing outlier.
Just Uncle Tom.
So what are they saying?
Oh, they're saying, no, it's like, it's pretty bad. It's like, they're blaming us, in a sense. This is what the Uncle Tom Canucks are doing right now. And all my fellow.
Like, we're not doing enough about.
Yeah, it's like they don't get the point. Like, it's bad. I mean, it's like I've had common ground with a lot of stuff on Rebel News, but not now. Because right now it's pretty bad. They don't get the point. They all love Trump. And you're an Uncle Tom Canadian at this point if you like anything about Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Magnus, can I just...
Yeah, go ahead.
So this is from CTV News. Trump's invasion threats violate international law, Canadian ambassador. From Paris, Canadian ambassador in France says the United States President Donald Trump's invasion threatens violate international law. I'm just saying that in order to respect international law, you don't threaten your neighbors by invasion, Stephen Dion said Monday at Canada's embassy in Paris, one day after Trump said he would impose a 25% tariff on steel and aluminum imports, including imports from Canada. So I'm going to take that off the tablet now and put whatever updates they got now on this tariff things. But I thought that I just wanted to put that in for the show.
Well, I read an interesting article this morning about. It was from a business professor who'd written a book, who is a business professor who specifically teaches and studies negotiating tactics, and he was sort of talking about Donald Trump's approach to negotiating, which is something we're seeing every day now in the news with his many, many statements. And he talks about, what Donald Trump's approach is, you know, based on both, you know, his own book, The Art of the Deal, which he wrote, you know, a couple of decades.
I don't even know if he was the writer of it.
Well, it's actually said it was ghostwritten, and they actually named the person who ghostwrote it for him by talking to Trump. So, I mean, it's not like it's not his thoughts or ideas, but he didn't sit at the typewriter or the computer and actually compose it, you know. And he talked about the difference between distributive negotiation and integrative negotiation. And, you know, Trump uses the what's called the distributive negotiating style, which is basically sees the negotiation as a zero-sum game of win and loss. It's not about looking for a mutually effective deal. It's not looking for a win-win. It's looking for him to win and others to lose. And the more, you know, the more he gets, you know, the more he wins. And that can work sometimes in business, but you know, the other style of negotiating, which is what tends to work in many situations, but particularly in international affairs, is the integrative negotiating style, where you're trying to, you know, you're trying to find a path forward that benefits all parties, and one that benefits everybody the most. And the problem, you know, big problem, you know, with the two different styles, particularly in the area of international affairs, is that the distributive approach, that the winner takes all, the, you know, zero-sum game of trying to get the most from your negotiating partner, is that it doesn't really take into account the need to build long-lasting relationships, which is really important in international relations. You can't just go and you know, abuse your neighbors or, you know, try and exploit them and then come back the next time and expect there to be a good situation for negotiation. You can't expect to at some point later turn and go, hey, I need some help with something, and have people go, oh, yeah, sure, we're there for you. If you've been, you know, so, and you see that with all the statements Trump has made since the election, in that, you know, his whole approach is to try and bully and threaten everyone he's working with. And he, you know, from his mindset, he sees that as a way to get what he wants. But the problem is, he wants to get what he wants, and he doesn't care what anyone else wants.
Well,
that can be disruptive. I just want to finish my point, and then I'll let you jump in.
Yeah.
You know, and it's become apparent that, you know, just through the threats on Canada, the threats on Mexico, you know, both the tariffs and the threat to sovereignty, the threats to Denmark, wanting to take over Denmark, the threats to Panama, and even, you know, even the sort of lack of clarity in his positions. What were the tariffs about? Were the tariffs about the border? Were the tariffs about supporting American trade? Were the tariffs about fairness? Were the tariffs just a negotiating position? Nobody can tell what he's thinking. And I think everybody can see, because unlike, you know, business negotiations which happen in private, you know, and often even the terms of a deal are, when they're finally reached, are secret, this is all happening in public. And every other negotiating partner, every other partner for the United States can see what's going on. They can see that Donald Trump and the United States are not really a reliable partner that you can work with. You know, when it comes to the tariffs, Donald Trump negotiated the USMCA, the US-Canada-Mexico Free Trade Agreement, himself in 2018. And here we are, the first thing he does in getting power, and essentially rip that up and ignore it. So what's the point of making a deal with Donald Trump if he doesn't honor them? And so just, I'm going to let you, I just want to finish my point before we change it. And then you can, and we're already seeing the impact of that. You know, Europe is already gearing up to opposed tariffs. I saw an article yesterday that the leader of Singapore, you know, making statements that, you know, Singapore and other nations in Asia need to get used to the idea that the United States is not a reliable partner and not, cannot be counted on to be a friend going forward, and that they need to chart, you know, a different path. And that's particularly significant for a country like Singapore, which is basically a small city-state, you know, that trades for, you know, is quite successful in the economic realm, but also has to trade for all its, for the resources it needs. And also, you know, it's not large enough to have a substantial military of its own. So it relies on its international relationships for its security. And the United States is presenting itself as not a reliable partner. And you're seeing that, you know, in other venues. And I think as the Trump presidency goes on, and maybe this is what, you know, he wants, but as it goes on, I think he's going to have more and more trouble getting cooperation from international partners that he can't bully out of them. You know, it's the idea that, you know, his America First policy really equals America alone by alienating all its partners.
Okay, the art of the deal 33 years ago meant that he was bankrupt. Okay? No, quite seriously. So isn't that book from the 1980s, the art of the deal? Okay, so he was born rich. This is the big secret, which is not so much of a secret if you're a sensible individual. He squandered the family fortune and became bankrupt 33 years ago.
Yeah.
So then he made himself a media star. Roger Stone was always interested since the 80s in making president in the United States.
One quick point is, and that sort of goes to my point too, that, you know, his style didn't necessarily get him success, his negotiating style of, because, you know, even in business, you need friends and partners. Go ahead.
This is from NBC Live Updates. Trump could announce tariffs on steel and aluminum today. A separate announcement about reciprocal tariffs for every country could come as soon as tomorrow, the president said yesterday. And what's sort of the key here is it could. You notice that it says it could come tomorrow. You don't know. It's what Doug Ford has been saying. You're changing the goalposts.
Well, we don't even know. He announced this sort of off the cuff on a flight yesterday, and who knows if he's going to follow through.
So I got some. Hopefully that's an update, because it is now 17 after 1 p.m. East Coast time, and he hasn't really said anything that I can pick up on my tablet. Anyway. So, and as I said, I read that from CTV News just a little while ago. It was he is breaking international law. And I think we have to get going to international law at this point. We have to right now, because we got to go to the United Nations about this immediately, because he is violating it.
Yeah.
And also, Amazon to Canadians is selling 51st Canadian state merchandise, supposedly.
I haven't seen it on Amazon itself.
I saw it on my tablet.
Yeah, I did as well. You know, one thing I think is interesting, and I'm not sure why Canada and the Mexico haven't done this yet, and I haven't seen any reporting on it as yet, but, you know, the USMCA, the Free Trade Agreement, those come with resolution mechanisms for disputes. And, you know, it seems to me it would be worth pursuing those, not because I think they're going to be successful, but it's worth pursuing because it more exposes that. And this hurts Donald Trump and the United States, you know, to have it shown that, you know, here's an agreement with an agreed upon dispute resolution process. And if you can make an agreement with the United States and then they ignore that agreement and its resolution processes, that's hurtful to them. They've hurt themselves by that in terms of their standing in international and with other partners. So, I think you know, even if we were successful, it seems like Donald Trump would ignore that kind of stuff. But I think it's worth pursuing all those avenues, even if it's just to show what's happening.
Well, I mean, it's a violation of that agreement because there's no emergency with the border. I mean, because I had the news article a few weeks ago that I misplaced, but it was that basically it said that the Emergency Order Act, which I'm getting a few things wrong here, but it's something like there's something that emergency, in case of emergency, they can do tariffs. Well, there's no emergency. It's a non-existent emergency. So he's violating one regulation after the other. I like to present a little conspiracy theory about Bill Gates, because Bill Gates met up with Donald Trump. And I find it very interesting that Bill Gates has not been one iota critical of Donald Trump. He was interviewed on CBC Radio Sunday morning, pre-taped, of course, but he hasn't said anything about Robert Kennedy Jr. being critical of that. Mm-hmm. He hasn't come to bat for Canada. So, Bill Gates, if you're hearing it now, we would appreciate hearing Canada if you're against all these tariffs.
Well, one thing I'd say in addition to that is that almost no major public figures and public political figures have really come out and said anything in opposition to anything Trump has done, whether they're Democrats or Republicans, you know, whether they're, you know, former presidents, you know.
I like to bring up something and,
you know, what, but why are, you know, maybe they're saving their for their moment, but, you know, what does Barack Obama or Bill Clinton have to say, or even George W. Bush?
Well,
you know, where's Kamala Harris, right?
Well, I know. Well, Ralph Nader has a weekly hour-long radio show. You can get it on the internet, and he hasn't mentioned anything about this yet.
Yep.
Okay, this is what I wanted to bring up, Magnus. Yep. And I'm listening on air. Possible help from this radio station. The governor of Kentucky was a YouTube posting or something. He said something like this. Now, I cannot email the governor of Kentucky because we live in Canada. They say, what state are you in? Now, they have a phone number, and I have my phone. I'm the last of the landliners, and I have a sort of a phone. I can't even phone Chilliwack or something. So I'm... After this show, I will maybe go over how I can contact the governor of Kentucky, because actually he has respectful statement about it. Because the thing is, his bourbon has been taken, but he was Democrat governor. However, he's part of the red states.
To be fair, some other Democratic governors, particularly in northern states that, you know, close to Ontario, which do a lot of trade with Canada, have also, you know, made some statements. But of course, we know that being Democrats, Donald Trump and the Republicans aren't even going to listen. They don't really care.
Well, I still want to have you help me phone later after the show.
Yeah. All right. Onwards and upwards. So, hopefully listeners won't get totally bored of hearing about this stuff, because, you know, it's gonna be a lot, because this wild ride is going to go on for the whole 4 years of the Trump presidency, if in fact the Trump presidency ends after 4 years.
Well, he could be impeached. I mean, I'm actually thinking of, in a sense, taking it to the over to the UN and have him impeached. Or Canada do something, because, and the other thing is about him being the 51st state. You got to go to the King Machucky first about that. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Well, of course, you know, they have, you know, if they don't care about the consent of Canada and Canadians, they're not going to care about.
No, but that is what the legality is.
Yeah, yeah.
And King Charles has been silent about it. Thanks a lot, Chucky, for basically nothing.
All right. Let's go to some local stuff in our area. We have a report from Jesse Wentzloff about New West's toilet strategy, which may not seem to be as important as the craziness in international affairs, but it actually does make a big difference to urban livability, and especially as we, in all our communities in Greater Vancouver, have issues with homelessness. And, of course, just people traveling around who need to use a facility. So this is a report from Jesse. Hope you enjoy it.
The City of New Westminster is developing a citywide toilet strategy to address gaps in the availability, safety, maintenance, and dignity of toilet facilities for all members of the community. Beginning with extensive consultation and research, the strategy aims to take into account the wide range of needs that residents of New Westminster have when it comes to public toilet access, and to partner with businesses, faith-based and nonprofit organizations to ensure equitable access to toilets across the city. I'm Jesse Wensloff, Public Affairs Coordinator for CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, and I sat down with John Stark, Manager of Social Planning with the City of New Westminster, who is overseeing the citywide toilet strategy.
I've been with the city for 18 years, and social planning deals with everything from childcare to seniors to people who aren't housed, trying to meet their needs.
Thanks for joining me, John. Why is access to toilets important?
Access to toilets is important because it's a human right and dignity issue. And we have individuals in our community who face challenges or barriers when accessing toilets. And these are seniors, people with disabilities, people with health conditions, families with young children. And recently, people are unhoused. They face really difficult challenges because of just the lack of toilets which operate late evenings and early mornings. So they have fewer options than even others.
How would you describe the City of New Westminster's current status or situation when it comes to public toilet facilities?
Well, we do have public toilets in our civic facilities, parks and rec facilities. I would say that there are times and locations where access is more challenging, late evenings, early mornings. We are doing a mapping exercise right now. We realize that some neighborhoods are not as well served as others. And also where there are businesses and faith-based and nonprofits, they tend to have more options than other communities, which may be more residential in nature.
What is the citywide toilet strategy?
The citywide toilet strategy, it's really taken a comprehensive look at access to toilets. It's a standalone strategy. Our social planning section is involved, which is quite unique because typically this would be an engineering endeavor. And the reason social planning is being involved is just as stated, looking at those individuals that face barriers or challenges to access. And as noted, seniors, people with disabilities, health conditions, families with young children, and the unhoused. We're mapping out current facilities. We're also doing case study research with a lot to look at partnerships, recognizing as a smaller municipality and also limited dollars. Just increasing the supply would be difficult. So how do we look at partnerships? And from that, also working with those groups to better understand their needs and to work with them around potential strategies and solutions. And as noted, partnerships will be important both with businesses and faith-based and nonprofits. And we have had some success also working with the senior levels of government. The city worked with BC Housing around the provision of a sanitation trailer, which is near our nightly shelter. It has two toilets, two sinks, and two showers. And in November 2024, there were close to 1,300 visits to that one facility. So it definitely shows the need, but recognizing that's one facility and how do we provide access in other areas.
You mentioned doing research and working with partners and other organizations. What have you learned from that process?
Yeah, in the United Kingdom, they have community toilet schemes. And this is where local governments work with businesses. And typically, they provide subsidies to those businesses to offset some of the cost of providing wider public access. And that's been quite successful in increasing the availability, including some businesses do operate during late evenings and early mornings. So that's been one potential opportunity that we're looking at for the City of New Westminster. Another is with regard to Edmonton in Winnipeg. They've partnered with faith-based and nonprofit organizations to provide access to their toilets. And in the case of Edmonton, they had people who were unhoused who got supported employment opportunities in the form of attendance. So they would help monitor and clean bathrooms. And this was a way of a dual benefit with regards to providing access, but also support employment. And I think there are lots of other examples. So we're really trying to keep an open mind and see what's out there and maybe take a different approach other than just providing more. But how can we do this that really meets those needs?